Welcome to the Resilient Training Lab podcast.
All right, we're back with another episode of the Resilient Training Lab podcast. I was realizing throughout the editing the last several episodes that I never introduced myself. So if people are listening because of our guests, they don't know who I am. They don't know who you are. They might just assume my voice is Paul and your voice is Ryan. So I'm your host, Ryan, here with Paul.
He just froze during all of that, so I have no idea what he said, but welcome to another episode.
I was just saying that I never introduced myself. So if somebody's listening as a result of like the guests that we have on, they have no idea who I am. I just start talking. So,
and we haven't been on without a guest in a long time. So
it's been a while. So yeah, just me and Paul today. Today we wanted to talk about physique changes. I think that's a main driver of starting to exercise for a lot of people. It was certainly why I wanted to lift weights when I was a kid. And now I still want to lift weights to change my physique. So I don't think that ever changes.
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes people frown upon having just physique goals, but hey, it's part of the game. Everyone wants to look better and feel better about their body, and making physique changes is a powerful way to do that. I think, you know, there seems to be almost a movement where physique changes are like frowned upon and people are more afraid to talk about them. And yes, there is a lot of other benefits of lifting weights, but we're all lying to ourselves if we don't say physique changes are part of the reason we lift.
I wholeheartedly agree. And it's something that can be really emotional for a lot of people. It's a complex topic. And I think as a result, a lot of the information that gets put out in like the universe is suboptimal or misleading or just downright false. And I think a lot of not nice people try and capitalize on how badly some individuals want to change their body, and they use that opportunity and their clients or their customers' lack of knowledge to sell shitty products or buying in on things that don't work to like line their own pockets. So
with physique changes, there's always somebody trying to sell some sort of quick fix. And unfortunately, there is no quick fix, which is probably going to be the main theme of today's talk. That is, physique changes take time and effort and consistent effort over long periods of time to see changes. So usually when someone's promising you that you're going to transform or whatever other word they like to use in 30 days or 60 days, they're selling you a line of crap because it takes years and years of consistent dedication. We can make changes during that time to keep you motivated because everyone's motivated by those changes, but it's a process.
Yeah, so important to get out of the way first, right? This is going to take time. This is not something that, you know, you start doing 6 weeks before a vacation or 4 weeks before a wedding, and like that's enough time. It's good to want to build better habits. And like we talked about earlier, like if you're denying training for physique changes isn't a part of why you go to the gym, like I just don't believe you. Anyway, if we're going to focus on physique changes, we got four bullet points up here that we want to run through. And this is what, if you know, you want to make these changes, and this can go in either direction, we have, you know, four areas that we think you guys should focus your efforts. And these four things are going to give you the biggest payoff and move you the most towards your goal compared to the amount of effort and energy it takes to focus on these things. So these are, after talking about that, it sounds like this is just another majoring in the minors episode.
Hey, we can't call it that again. We did enough of this. But that's what it is.
Yeah, majoring in the minors, but not that for physique changes. So the first thing that we got is energy intake. And this is something that we've talked about a lot. I think it's everywhere you look on social media and, you know, just on like TV and whoever you're talking to, most people are aware of calories being energy and how much you eat is going to directly affect your body weight, but we can't not talk about it. So we're going to get this one out of the way first. And so I guess I would start by saying, if we are focusing on physique changes, I guess we should define that first, right?
Yeah, so what I was about to say.
You want to take a crack at it?
Yeah. So when talking about physique changes, we're either talking about or a combination of adding lean muscle mass to our frame and losing body fat. So usually a combination of these two things is going to lead to the physique changes that we want. You know, everyone tends to want a leaner, more muscular physique, whether they use the word, whether the words they use are different. But when someone's talking about getting jacked or yoked or toned, even, they're talking about getting leaner and more muscular. I think it's just the difference is the amount of musculature that some people want, but the musculature is what people are after. I think it was you that Ryan that said this was like, if you're X weight and you lose a bunch of weight and you don't like strength train and don't put on muscle mass or at least maintain the muscle mass you have, you just become like a smaller version of your current self and your physique doesn't actually change. It's like a homunculus.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a proportional decrease. And most people, when they talk about physique changes, aren't saying, I want to be a smaller version of the exact way that I look now. People are usually coming into the gym and telling us that they want either like a firmer or a flatter stomach, or they want to see abs, that they want to have definition in their arms, or they want rounded shoulders. They want to be able to see the definition from like all the lifting that they've been doing, or they want to be able to see the muscles in their back, or they want thicker legs or a bigger butt. Like all of those things that I just described, like you have to have muscle mass in order for those things to exist. You can't see muscle mass that isn't there. So if you want defined arms, guess what? You should probably be lifting weights. So when we're talking about these changes, it, like Paul just said, it is a relative decrease of the amount of body fat that we're carrying in relation to how much muscle mass we're currently supporting.
Yeah, that's a much fancier way to say it. I think it's important to, we're going to bang this one to death today, but it's important to highlight, like, I think a lot of people are afraid to gain muscle mass and gain weight. And a lot of times gaining muscle mass and therefore gaining weight, because you can't really gain muscle mass without gaining weight, is part of the physique change process. It might not be the first thing we do, but at some point in that physique change process, we're going to have to put on more muscle mass, and that usually requires gaining a little bit of weight.
So with that, I think it's really common when somebody starts training in the gym, within the first few months, they start bitching that their clothes don't fit anymore and like they're getting too bulky. And let me just tell you, in 3 months of training, you did not put on so much muscle mass that your clothes are fitting better. Clothes are fitting tighter. It's usually like a simultaneous increase of like, you're gaining muscle mass, but you're also gaining a lot of body fat. And you made a post about this, Paul, where you gained 100 pounds and put like 1 inch on your waist, right?
Yeah, but that was over, you know what, like a 15-year period. So I think it was important to highlight that we do have to gain weight to put on muscle mass, but we also have to keep ourselves in check and make sure that we're not just gaining a bunch of fat, because that is also a trap people fall into. It's like people can't find that middle ground. They either just want to like lose a ton of weight and have no muscle mass to show, or just gain a bunch of weight and tell everyone that they're, you know, putting on muscle mass when they're really just putting on excess adipose tissue.
I think that's a result of it being so, do I use the word easy, right? It's like training is easy, or it's the easier part of this, in my opinion, where you just show up and work hard for an hour or two, like four or five times a week. But to actually track and measure how many calories you're eating, or have some sort of way of reliably controlling energy intake, takes a lot of effort. So like you said, you end up seeing those extremes where people either overconsume food and use exercise as almost an excuse to justify sort of like kind of being a slob. And then it goes the other way, where if somebody really wants to lose weight, again, it's not that difficult to be hungry all the time and have shitty workouts, but like you can't reliably perform in those workouts if you're doing that. So it's like, I don't think either approach is that great or that healthy. So like you said, there's probably a middle ground there.
Yeah, and that's what it comes down to. And kind of to circle this all back to energy intake, where we kind of went off on a little tangent, but like always, to circle it back to energy intake is like, we have to make sure that if we are trying to lose body fat, that we are in a calorie deficit. And if we are trying to gain muscle mass, we're in a calorie surplus. I think, you know, maybe as a beginner lifter, you can maintain your weight and lose body fat and gain muscle mass at the same time. But the more you lift, the longer you lift, the more hard pressed you're going to be to do that. And the more you're going to have to actually dedicate time to losing body fat and dedicate separate time to like gaining muscle mass.
And it's kind of that's the opposite of what you normally see. You usually see beginners jump in and run these like crazy bulking periods of time throughout the year. And then they cut and they end up gaining and losing the same 10 or 15 pounds for 10 straight years and don't really see any significant physique changes.
Guilty. Yeah.
We all are.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, there's the idea of just like being able to maintain your muscle mass and like put on muscle and get leaner, like seems ideal, and seems like in theory it would be a great idea, but it just doesn't work out too well most of the time, except when you're first starting to lift weights, just because putting on muscle is extremely difficult. You'd be hard pressed to put on, I don't want to put a number on it, but more than 10 pounds of muscle in a year, somewhere around there, if you're really like busting your ass and eating properly. So it's like, if muscle is that hard to put on, we want to make sure that we're kind of, when we're trying to put on muscle, we're doing everything we can to put on muscle during that time period. So I think that's another important thing to highlight, is how hard it is to put on muscle mass, and that it's a slow process, so that if you are gaining weight, you shouldn't be gaining, you know, 5, 10, 15 pounds a month. You should be gaining more like 2 to 5 pounds a month, and it should be a slow, steady process.
Yeah, we have that bullet point up there that whatever direction you're choosing to go with your physique changes, whether it's increasing muscle mass and likely gaining weight, or trying to decrease body fat and losing weight, that it should be a slow and steady process. What would the consequences be for rushing that process, where you drop, you know, 5 or 8 pounds in a month, and or the opposite, where you gain 5 or 8 pounds in a month?
So on both ends, it's just not super sustainable. The faster you're going, the more extreme your diet's going to have to be, and the less sustainable it's going to be. And then in terms of gaining weight, you just can't put muscle on that fast. So you're definitely going to be putting on body fat, and we want to minimize that as we gain weight. I think one of the best things you can do is kind of keep track of your waist measurement as you're gaining weight, and you don't want to see your waist measurement go up too much as you're putting weight on. And if it is going up, then you're probably putting on excess body fat and not as much muscle as you think. And then on the flip side, if we're losing weight too fast, we are going to be losing a higher proportion of lean body mass. So we're going to be actually losing the muscle that we're trying to show off if we're losing weight too fast. You can, again, only lose fat so fast. And they've done some research showing that when you're a little slower with your fat loss progress, you're going to lose a greater percentage of fat mass over lean body mass. And that is complemented by strength training.
Before we head into the next point of strength training, you know, to kind of wrap this one up, if you look around whenever you see people talking about fitness in whatever, probably in school, at your work, in the tabloids, it's usually with a time frame attached to it, right? So it's like, you know, lose 20 pounds in 5 weeks. And, you know, that I think most people recognize that that's extreme, but you might see something like, you know, run this 12-week cut or whatever it is. But in reality, like we just said, the faster that you try and cheat this process, the less likely you are to be successful in the long run. And so I know, Paul, you've had some trouble with your stomach gaining weight and trying to keep food down. And for a lot of people, I think that focusing on foods that either make you feel like full or not full, depending on which direction you want to go, can be a good way to get started. So if like somebody who is trying to manage their calorie intake and keep it down, having lots of vegetables, fiber, like lean proteins, things that will eat and not drive up your calorie intake, but will leave you feeling full and energized as a really sustainable long-term approach to this. And then you could say the opposite for if you're looking to gain weight, not eating a ton of highly filling, you know, whole grains and vegetables, like getting carried away with those when you're trying to pack down the calories, you end up just kind of upsetting your tummy a little bit, huh?
Yeah, that's probably a better way to think about foods. I think a lot of times people fall into the trap of thinking about foods as good or bad, and there are no good or bad foods in general. It's just kind of for the situation. People always use the like Pop-Tart example. It's like, yeah, you could lose weight eating just Pop-Tarts. You just probably wouldn't feel great because Pop-Tarts aren't that filling and they're calorie dense, and it's very easy to eat 2,000 calories of Pop-Tarts. You know, it's just like three or four Pop-Tarts in your got your 2,000 calories in, and that's not going to leave you feeling very full, which could be a good thing if you needed 2,000 extra calories and were struggling to keep it down. Like, so if you, it's not that the Pop-Tarts are good or bad, it's just the context. Like, if I was trying to lose weight, it would probably not be a great idea to waste my calories on Pop-Tarts when I only had 2,000 calories to eat. But if I had 4,000 calories to eat and I was struggling to get them down, Pop-Tarts might become my best friend. So it's more about your goals and whether the foods leave you satisfied or not. I think the reason a lot of these foods get dubbed good and healthy foods is because they are very satisfying and make you feel full after you eat them, which is a good thing when you don't have a lot of calories to spare.
Yeah, put a bow on that one. So just a quick recap, energy intake, we got to decide if we want to gain weight, build muscle mass, or lose body fat. So we got to be in a calorie deficit or surplus. I said those backwards. So if you want to gain weight, surplus, lose weight, deficit. We want to focus on foods that either help us feel full or are easier for us to get down, depending on the goal, right? So all foods are going to fit within the context of our diet somewhere, and we just need to be aware of where they fit. And then finally, don't try and rush the process. The faster you go and the quicker you try and do things, I think the less sustainable the process, the less likely you are to experience long-term success.
And it's less efficient. Feel like you're going faster, but you're just losing more muscle mass when you're losing weight and gaining more fat when you're gaining weight. And you probably end up in a worse spot than if you just did it slow and steady.
Isn't that like, isn't in physics, like you have to travel some sort of distance to have done work. So like if you keep gaining and losing the same 10 pounds, you're in the same spot, you haven't actually done any work.
Exactly. So, you know, if every time you lose weight, you lose 5 pounds of muscle and you lose 5 pounds of fat, and then you, every time you gain weight, you gain 5 pounds of fat and 5 pounds of muscle. You just keep ending up in the same spot. So if you slowly gained weight and you gained 8 pounds of muscle and 2 pounds of fat, and then you slowly lost fat and you lost 8 pounds of fat and 2 pounds of muscle, it would take much, much longer, but you would end up in a positive spot instead of just spinning your wheels over and over again. And I think we can put a number on that. I think research shows about 0.5 to 1% of your body weight per week is a reasonable goal for weight gain or weight loss. And that comes out to about 0.5 to 1 pound for most people.
If you're an extreme example, like obviously there are outliers, but most of you listening, probably not an outlier.
Everyone thinks they're an outlier though.
Statistically, we can't all be outliers. All right. So yeah, 0.5% to 1% in either direction is a pretty good ballpark. It's going to be a little bit faster to lose body fat than gain muscle mass. Yeah. Keep that in mind. All right. So a big part of physique changes, like we just talked about, you got to have muscle to look like you have muscle. So we get there by strength training. And I think one of the biggest mistakes people make when they are looking to, I guess this is really only a mistake people make when they're trying to lose weight. I don't really know anybody who tried to gain weight by not strength training. I think it was really popular with like bodybuilders back in the day where like they'd be getting ready for a competition and then all of a sudden they start like eating grass and only doing cardio and they go into their shows and don't look good anymore and they wonder what happened. It's like, well, yeah, you stopped training heavy, you stopped training hard. So when we're focusing on these physique changes, no matter which direction we're going, we got to keep lifting weights.
For sure. The strength training is going to be hugely important when you are doing both of these things. Obviously, you're not going, well, I guess it's not so obvious, but you're not going to build muscle without strength training, and you're not going to build muscle without doing a large amount of sets and reps very close to failure with adequate output, with adequate rest in between, so that you can actually use the most amount of weight possible is going to be necessary for building muscle. And when it comes to losing weight, there's a ton of research that, you know, you can lose weight just as well with any type of exercise. It doesn't matter if you're walking, running, doing strength training, you're going to, as long as you are creating that calorie deficit, you're probably going to lose the same amount of weight. There's a lot of research showing that, and people will pull that research up and be like, look, it doesn't matter whether you're what kind of exercise you're doing, these people all lost the same amount of weight. And that's true. But then when you dig into that data and you look at the percentage of fat mass versus the percentage of lean muscle mass they lost, you always see the strength training group in the best position there, where they've lost a majority of fat mass and very little lean muscle mass. And then you'll see in the like cardio only groups or the non-exercise groups, close to like a 50-50 loss in muscle mass and fat mass, which is not what you want.
Right. And one of the reasons for that is muscle mass is such a demanding tissue for your body to hold on to that at the first like sign that you give your body like, hey, it's okay to let this muscle mass go, it's going to be like, all right, get this out of here. Because it's metabolically a very active tissue. And so when like we're looking to lose weight, yeah, we have to fight that. And the way that we fight that is by everything that Paul just said, training heavy and not switching over to, circuit style training that gets your heart rate up and makes you out of breath. Because as soon as you stop lifting heavy, which is what happens when you start working out like that, you end up losing muscle mass.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think they're doing a lot with the switching to that type of workout because, their watch will tell them they're burning more calories. They feel real sweaty and dead at the end. And, their muscles burn, right? And they're like, oh, my muscles burn. I'm sore. Like, it's got to be working my muscles. But when we're looking at muscle and building muscle, I think the biggest factor is going to be overall lifting volume of the program, which is going to be like sets times reps times weight. And when you're constantly moving and resting very short, the weight in that equation is going to be very low. Even if you're working your ass off just because you're not resting that much, you can't move as much weight as you possibly could. And that's going to bring that total down, even if you do a crazy amount of reps and sets in that time period. You're like totally just like pulling down one of the three variables.
Yeah, I think the more advanced you are, the more this might matter. When you were training for physique changes, and let's say you're in a deficit, your ability to handle volume is not going to be as high as it would if, as if you were in a surplus or like closer to maintenance, right? And I think we can agree that that's true for an advanced trainee. But if you're a beginner and you've been lifting for, it's tough to say because everybody has different starting points and progresses at different rates, but you know, I would be confident to say that if you're within your first year or two of training, there's a pretty good chance that you can still increase how much volume you can tolerate, even if you're in a deficit. So it's one of those things where people get nervous to train hard and increase the amount of training that they're doing if they're in a deficit. But like, if you don't have 10 years of training under your belt and you're not pushing, you know, close to elite level numbers in your lifts, it's probably not a concern.
Yeah, I think most people overplay like how much being in a deficit is going to affect their performance in the gym. I think if it's done, again, in that slow, steady manner that we talked about in step number one, your performance is going to should be very maintainable, and you could even progress while in a deficit if you're a newer lifter. You know, when we get to the extremes, like if you're dieting to get on stage, like yes, if you're going into single digit body fats, you're probably going to see a big dip in performance. If we're in normal ranges and we're with a more novice athlete, there's no reason to. I think people like mind fuck themselves into going backwards while they're in a deficit because they just hear everyone saying, like, oh, you're going to get weak because you're in a deficit, especially in the powerlifting world. Like powerlifters are like scared to lose weight because they think they're going to like shrivel up and be weak. And it's like, no, if you lose weight at a slow and steady progress, you shouldn't lose any strength. And in fact, that's probably one of the markers I'm looking at is, you know, if I can be pretty damn sure that we're not losing too much muscle mass if strength is staying level as we lose weight.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And to say it again, if you're losing weight and your weights are going down, there's a good chance you're losing muscle mass. So that can be a really good indicator or some good feedback for you, where if you're able to maintain your performance in all your training sessions and your weights are the same or possibly improving, depending on, you know, where you're at in your training block and training career, like if all of those things are going well, and the scale is moving down, there's a pretty good chance that the scale is going down because you're losing body fat. I think those are two, like that along with the waist measurement that you said earlier, are both really great indicators of body fat loss without sacrificing much muscle mass or like gaining body fat.
Yeah, I think even in an advanced lifter, your one rep max might change, or your ability to like really push your top weight might change as you lose weight because your leverages change and you're so like dialed into your technique as you're more, if you're more advanced, but your like rep numbers shouldn't be dropping that much. If your rep numbers are shitting the tank, like you probably need to assess what you're doing. So I think that holds true across the board, even in more advanced lifters.
Do you have anything else to add on strength training or why it's important in this context?
So I think it's also important to talk a little bit just about training heavy in terms of intensity as well. I think a lot of times when we're talking about physique changes, people get really caught up in volume and they end up like just doing like 12 plus reps for everything and never venture down into the lower rep ranges. While they are not as important for building muscle, I think it's important to just highlight that you should still be strength training in all the different rep ranges, like the, you know, 3 to 5, 5 to 8, 8 to 12, then like 12 plus. And you might be a little skewed into the higher rep ranges, but you shouldn't neglect the lower rep ranges because there are muscle fibers that are only going to be activated in those kind of higher intensity sets. So we don't want to neglect them. I think that's a common thing, especially in like bodybuilding type programs. You'll see like no lower rep work. And I think that's a mistake.
Yeah, without a doubt. We want to make sure we're hitting all different levels of output. And so like you said earlier as well, training within a really close proximity to failure is going to be important. And like, we want to be close to failure in all of those rep ranges. So, you know, taking sets to RPE 6, 7, 8 with the occasional like RPE 9 or the occasional AMRAP thrown in there, depending on the exercise and the rep range, is going to go a long way in telling your body that hey, we still need this muscle mass, so do everything that you can to preserve it.
Yeah, like we said, it's hard to build muscle mass. It's very easy to lose muscle mass. It's a metabolically expensive tissue, which is a good thing. We want it because then we can eat more because it's metabolically expensive. So it takes a lot of calories to maintain muscle mass. That's a good thing. It makes us harder to kill.
And if it wasn't so hard to maintain muscle mass, probably wouldn't be a goal of ours, right? Wouldn't be having this discussion.
We'd all be yoked.
Yeah, I wonder if everybody was yoked what the goal would be. All right, so we got protein now. Protein is another one that is going to have a major impact on our physique. And like energy intake and calories, I think this one gets beaten to death a lot. But most people are kind of misinformed on what adequate protein intake is. And, you know, so we'll see. Maybe you guys knew this, maybe you guys didn't. But so if we're in a calorie surplus, our body doesn't have to convert the protein that we're eating into ATP and energy that it can use because it's getting adequate energy from the carbs and the fats that we're eating. So big picture, it becomes more important when we're in a deficit. And so to put some numbers on this, when we're in a calorie surplus, or like we have adequate caloric intake, the number that the research is typically using as enough to support the gain or like maintenance of the amount of muscle mass that you have is 1.6 grams per kilogram of body weight. So what this would look like in not kilograms, if we have a 150-pound individual and a 200-pound individual, at that rate, the 150-pound person would need 110 grams of protein, and the 200-pound person would need 145 grams of protein. And again, this is in a calorie either like maintenance or surplus. When we head into a deficit, a lot of the research is at like 2.2 grams per kilogram or above. So what you see with these higher levels of protein consumption with somebody in a caloric deficit is, like we were talking about earlier with strength training, you end up maintaining or preserving more muscle mass through the weight loss process. And so again, big picture, for the 150-pound person, that's 150 grams of protein per day. And for the 200-pound person, it's 200 grams of protein per day. So it becomes disproportionately important to consume protein when you're in a calorie deficit. That was a lot of talking.
I think this is probably the biggest thing I see in beginners that they have a very hard time getting to. But then for some reason, with all the meatheads, they eat like way too much protein. And I guess there's really no such thing as too much protein, which is a good thing, I guess, to go into, is I think that's a lot of what scares people about this is, like, you hear so many different things about protein. You hear so many different numbers recommended too. You hear all the way from, I think the lowest, I think the minimum recommendation is like 0.6 or 0.8 grams per kilogram. So you hear all of these different things and it's like, why is this range so big and where do I fall in it? And first of all, that's the minimum recommended. That's like the bare minimum is that 0.6, 0.8 number that you hear when we're talking about athletes and the active population and people who lift weights. You almost always are going to be skewed in that higher direction of 1.6 to 2.2, like Ryan talked about. But then they've done research where they've had people on diets up to like 4 or 5 grams per kilogram, and there were no negative effects at all. There's a lot of people who think there's like an old school myth that like eating too much protein is bad for your kidneys or whatever. I think it was kidneys, yeah, because it made them work harder, but that's what kidneys do. Like, that's their job. So it's not, they've beaten that research to death that there's no detriment to eating extra protein. And then they've actually shown that a lot of people do really, really well with super high protein and eating more protein because it's filling and, you know, it's hard to overeat a lot of protein. And we'll see people who, when they're first starting to kind of actually pay attention to what they're eating really struggle to hit these protein numbers. You know, like they'll really struggle to like, they'll see like, oh, I'm eating like 40 grams of protein a day. And they'll see like 150 grams of protein is what they should be eating. And they'll be like, there's no way I could do that. So I think it's just something that's important to highlight that it's, if you're just starting out, definitely take a look at your protein intake because it's probably too low.
Yeah. I think another myth that is really popular with protein is if you can't eat more than like 40 or 50 grams in a serving or your body doesn't do anything with it. And you know, that's just total bullshit. I remember the first time I heard that I was throwing down like a 50 gram slam after training one day. Some guy was like, yeah, you shouldn't do that. Your body can't use all that at once. And I believe them.
I'm pretty sure I was taught that in school, actually. So that must
really
be, it was at one point in time.
Fewer than I was.
Yeah, at one point in time, it was believed, but they've done more research and shows that that's not actually true, and that we will store the protein and use it later. So it's not super important when you get your protein. It's just that you get the protein, and that goes for that 50 gram slam post workout. We used to think that like if you didn't drink the protein shake within, you know, 2 minutes of finishing, that your gains would go out the window. And it turns out that as long as you're eating adequate protein throughout the day, that the timing of it isn't super important.
Fortunately, one of the benefits of training for physique goals, while it can be important to set performance goals along the way because it helps you stay consistent and lift weights and push yourself, meal timing is actually less important for physique changes. So you can get your protein in and your calories in whenever and however you need to hit your goals, and it's not going to change your physique like in the long run at all. And so I know people often will say that like they're worried about eating, you know, carbs late at night or just eating late at night in general. They're worried about consuming big meals. They think they have to eat at like certain frequencies throughout the day. And like I just said, the great thing is none of that actually matters for your physique. It can have performance implications, sure, when it comes to recovery and difficult sessions and multiple training sessions in a day, but that's not the goal. That's not the topic of this podcast. So like good news, you guys have our permission to eat however and whenever you need to hit your protein and your calorie goals, because that's going to get you where you want to be.
Yeah. You see all sorts of different diets. And I think over the years, there's been different things that have come and gone, like the frequent meal timing to keep your metabolism up. And all that stuff's kind of been debunked. And like Ryan said, it's just more about the totality of, I won't even say the day, but really like the week.
Yeah.
It's like big picture wise, what things look like. Nutrient timing, like Ryan said, is going to be more performance based. And even in that arena is going to be very close to the tip of the pyramid of things that matter. So really, we want to make sure that calories and protein are in check and that we are, so far, the things we talked about, calories in check, protein in check, and that we are lifting heavy and close to failure with a adequate amount of volume.
I remember Lane Norton making a post about even when you control calories, like let's say you have a bunch of people who, you know, are eating the same amount of calories and hypothetically like they all are the same and have the same calorie requirements. The higher the protein gets in these weight loss groups, the leaner you end up and the more muscle mass you retain. So I know the top end of the numbers that I gave was 2.2 grams per kilogram of body weight, which ends up being 1 pound or 1 gram per pound of body weight, which is just an easier conversion for all of us US folk. But that's not, that's like a floor. That's not the ceiling. So you can go above that. You can go to 2.6 grams per kilogram. You can go to 3 grams per kilogram. And that's why Paul was saying earlier, there are no detrimental effects to consuming that much protein. The only thing that you're going to see due to the way that we metabolize protein and the cost of digesting it, you actually just end up leaner the more protein that you can fit in within the allotted calories that you have. So push that protein as much as you can.
Yeah, for sure. there's more and more research showing that going above that number can have additional benefits, but probably not enough to say it concretely yet.
They really say anything concretely. So finally, one of the common behaviors people implement when they're trying to specifically lose weight, right? People don't really do tons of cardio when they're looking to gain weight. They actually go the other way and don't. They actually stop doing all of it, and that's not cool either. So I guess we could just talk about cardio in general, right? That's probably a better topic. But specifically, I'm talking about when we're looking to lose weight, there's this belief that we have to do more cardio. And I believe that that stems from marketing and just information out there, or misinformation that's out there, that says that if you do certain types of cardio, your body ends up burning more fat. And like, that's like a half truth, because while it is possible to exercise at a certain heart rate or a certain effort level where your body will prioritize burning fat, what they don't tell you is that, like, let's say you do that for an hour in a day, the other 23 hours, it's going to counteract that, or it's going to like balance it out, where if you're preferentially burning fat as your fuel source throughout that hour of exercise, the other 23 hours, you're going to spend preferentially burning like more carbohydrate or more glycogen as a result. So it ends up offsetting, and like the way that you're exercising is moot for fat loss. It's just like total activity is what matters. And so I think it's a way to spin your wheels and end up feeling pretty tired and run down. And like, you can kind of get burnt out on the gym if you're spending extra hours there doing tons of cardio that really you don't need to be doing in that way. So I think that's a really common hang up and misperception that I see specifically on the weight loss side of things.
Yeah, I think the rise of the smartwatch has made this all the worse, because when your heart rate's super high for a very long period of time, those smartwatches spit out some crazy calorie burn numbers, and people are like, hell yeah, I burned 1,000 calories during this workout. And first of all, those numbers aren't accurate at all. And second of all, like Ryan said, our bodies are pretty damn amazing. And if you burn more calories during that workout, you're probably going to burn less calories in the 23 hours afterwards. And I always use this example with people, and it seems to click, is like Ryan said, what matters is the total activity. So completely arbitrary numbers, but say you're sitting on your ass doing absolutely nothing, burning zero calories, even though you burn calories sitting on your ass. But say, you know, the arbitrary number here is zero. And then you decide to get up and exercise for an hour, and you do workout A and you burn 500 calories. And then you do workout B and you burn 550 calories, 600 calories. The difference from going sitting on your ass and doing something is the big difference, not from workout A to workout B. The difference from workout A to workout B is like one miniature Reese's Pieces. Like the difference from getting up off your ass and doing something is the one we care about. So you need to find things that you enjoy and that you can do a lot of. And then to tie it back to point number two, is that we want to be, you know, doing what we can to build or maintain muscle mass through strength training. So we want to probably put majority of our energy there. And that is not even bringing in the complexity of like post-exercise oxygen consumption, and the fact that really, if you wanted to argue details, you probably burn more calories strength training, because of the recovery process afterwards is more calorie intensive than the recovery process of doing a bunch of cardio. Difference is still moot, but even with it being moot, you can make the argument that strength training wins.
Something that often gets overlooked, or like I actually never really see many people outside of the field talking about, it's like, again, your body is incredibly efficient and amazing. And let's say you're in a prolonged calorie deficit, like your body compensates for that and starts to expend fewer calories just through normal processes. So like it's amazing. Like you'll see people fidgeting less. Like they'll be less likely to go out and move in spontaneous ways or like non-planned ways. They'll do things like blink slower. They'll talk slower. Like your body is incredible. So you can try and like trick it as much as you want to. And so like specifically this cardio example where like you might burn more in the moment, but like your body's going to get the last laugh because it knows how to slow things down and save energy expenditure in ways that you literally don't even have conscious control over. So.
Yeah. And that goes opposite way too. Like when there's like some research showing people that have a harder time gaining weight and people that have a hard time losing weight actually do that even more so. Where their body subconsciously will be more or less active depending on their calorie intake. So yeah, it's hard. That's what makes this so hard is our body is very, very efficient and it likes to stay at status quo.
Yeah. And even like if you're a very trained individual and you carry a lot of muscle mass, let's say you like significantly overconsume calories in a given period, you're a lot more likely to expend those extra calories as heat and they just end up not turning into body fat compared to somebody who doesn't have as much as muscle mass and is not as trained. So your body can be really like incredible in the way that it partitions the foods that you're consuming and the ways that it just behaves as a result of like your energy intake.
Yeah. And then just another layer to this is like, if we are in a calorie deficit and our ability to recover is slightly impaired and we want to maintain as much strength as possible, we want to make sure that most of our training stress is attributed to maintaining muscle mass, right? So if we're doing a bunch of extra cardio, we're probably taking away from our ability to maintain muscle mass. And then even if we were losing weight faster, it wouldn't be as efficient. And again, come back to that example of the ratio of weight loss from lean mass to fat mass and how important that is. So we need to get moving. We want to be working out, but we don't need to change what we are doing drastically because we want to lose fat.
Having lower output movement that is outside of the gym, like Paul said, if we can allocate a certain amount of training stress, it's probably in our best interest if we have physique goals to allocate as much of it to lifting weights as possible. But then we can still keep up our movement and our physical activity by doing things that are longer duration, but not as high output. So things like going for walks, doing easy bike rides, like whatever, really whatever activity you like to do.
Gardening, clean the house, literally any non-exercise activity counts for NEAT, which is going to be something that we want to keep high. And this is where you want to add more movement. This is where you can up that movement total in a non-stressful way, in potentially all movement is stress, but in a very low stress way that potentially could have other positive benefits mentally and physically that will help the weight loss process. Just being out and being active is going to make you a overall happier person, especially now that the weather's warmer.
And if you're going the other way with this, you know, if you want to build muscle mass and increase your body weight, like your conditioning and cardiovascular health is still going to be very important for you. And NEAT is going to be very important for you, likely because it will keep you by staying moving, you are going to be more prepared for your sessions. You're going to be able to recover more both in between sets. So like if you have a hard set, you'll be ready to go for the next one and you'll recover more during your rest time. And in between sessions, you'll be able to handle, on average, like more training stress and higher training loads than if you were to be the kind of making fun of the stereotypical like sloppy, lazy lifter where you train heavy and train hard, but don't do anything outside of that. So in the long run, I think in terms of, like we said, building training volume, increasing muscle mass, and reducing your overall risk for injury, this is going to be a big one.
Don't skip your cardio and be a lazy, non-moving sloth if you are trying to gain weight. I've been there, and you just end up feeling like shit, and then you can't do any of the stuff with all that extra muscle mass anyways. So do your cardio. It'll help your recovery. It'll help your overall health, and that's really the end game here. And if you are losing weight, don't put all your eggs in the cardio basket. Make sure you're maintaining your strength training and driving as much effort as you can there, and then just moving as much as possible in a more low intensity, low stress manner. I'd actually, with that just said, I would argue that I wouldn't be afraid to make the argument that conditioning and cardio is more important during a weight gain period than a weight loss period, especially more like higher intensity anaerobic type conditioning stuff.
Especially because the more tissue you gain, the more you're asking your heart to take care of. And
yep.
Yeah, you made me laugh. I used to get shin splints from like walking more than 10 minutes when I was a slob.
Out of breath going up the stairs, asking for help to put your socks on. It's not a good look. Not a good look, powerlifters. Making us look bad. Had like the first powerlifting meet I ever went to, I'll never forget. Vinny D'Enzo was there, who has now lost like 150 pounds and is an absolute, like he benched 600 pounds on like every weight class on the way down as he lost weight too. So he's an absolute freak, and he's no longer this way. I think, you know, it took him to getting to this point to realize it wasn't a way to live. And I think I've read a blog or something where he actually described, I'm pretty sure he was talking about this meet that I was at, because he comes in, he has two folding chairs with him. He unfolds both of them, sits down, has to have two chairs to sit down. He's too big for one chair. And his wife had to put on his knee sleeves, put on his socks, put on his shoes. And he just sat there the whole time eating a loaf of bread and drinking Pepsi. And I was like, and this is the height of powerlifting. So, you know, probably not a great look for the sport, and definitely not good for your health. And although Vinny was strong, I think I'll speak for him because he posts about it all the time, that was not the height of his life when he was, you know, 300 plus pounds, just because he could bench 600 pounds. And then, like I said, he's a badass and benched 600 pounds on like every weight class on his way down to, I want to say he did it in 220, and now he's below 200 pounds and he's a freak still.
Abs and
yeah,
strong as hell. But that was not a fast descent.
Right? No, that was I think that was like a four or five, 6 year process. And that was with a very big base of muscle. I mean, although he was fat when he was 300 plus pounds, you know, there's definitely muscle under there if he benching 600 plus pounds.
Yeah, and he's still shredded today. So he has not only been able to make that change, but sustain it over a long period of time. And just again, whatever our goal is, like if you were there in 6 months and then 6 months after that, you no longer were there, like, would you want that? And for me, the answer would be no. So hopefully the four things that we just talked about will help you guys to consistently focus your efforts in places that have returns that move you towards the goals that you want. And if you can find ways to make like the interventions or the topics that we just talk about a part of your daily life and not necessarily feel like work or like deprivation, that's when I think you have the highest chances of long-term success and maintaining the physique that you want.
That's it. So those four things: focusing on energy intake, whether it be your calorie deficit or surplus, making it slow and steady and maintainable, focusing on strength training, maintaining the training heavy, keeping a high training volume, trying to preserve or gain muscle mass, high protein diet to help with fullness, to help maintain and preserve and gain muscle mass, and then to control your cardio, not doing too much high intensity cardio, and when you are trying to lose weight, and not dropping all your cardio altogether when you are trying to gain weight, will lead you to success in physique changes.
All right. That wraps it up. So thanks for listening.
We got to start doing more plugs at the end.
Yeah. So. All right. So what are we plugging now?
We have to follow us on the gram. April's coming up. So we have the next cohort of the coaches mentorship, physical therapy lens starting towards the end of April. April 1st will be opening up registration again. So if you are interested in learning more about all of this stuff, sign up for our mentorship. And if you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review.
So with the mentorship, right, all you guys listening, if you know trainers or physical therapists or aspiring trainers or aspiring physical therapists or anybody interested in any healthcare field at all, the mentorship that we put together is for, like, it includes them, whether it's chiros, athletic trainers, like LMTs, any of that stuff. We talk about exercise through all of those lenses, and like, there is value for those professions. So if you know anybody, send them our way.
Yeah. All healthcare professionals should be able to understand training and programming and periodization. And that's what we go into detail about.
All right. At Resilient Training Lab on Instagram, www.resilienttraininglab.com. We got a special going on for Revolution. $2 down, 2 months free, 2 weeks of personal training.
Correct.
So if you're in the area. Deal. Yeah. Bunch of twos. If you're in the North Haven area, come train with us. It's a great deal. And what's our monthly conditioning challenge for April? Do we have one yet?
Step challenge. 10,000 steps. Starting to get nice out. We're going to try to up our knee. Perfect for today.
All right. So we're going to do a 10,000 step challenge for the month of April. This is probably going to go live on the last day of March. So perfect. Should be good to go there. Starting tomorrow. Better start today. Get a head start. One day early. go get steps in. All right.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Till next week.